This year we've been talking a lot about Holy Week as a whole story. So we come to this part of the story, which you could say is the ending. The ending, just like any story, where we know it keeps going afterwards. But this is the conclusion, the finale, the grand moment. And it reminds us, again, of how this story keeps on being about how people's expectations are not met by Jesus. So we started on Palm Sunday with crowds gathered seeking a Messiah. They were looking for someone who would be a prince, who would free them from the Roman oppression. They wanted someone on a horse with a sword who would lead them in a fight for freedom. And they got Jesus, who didn't carry a sword and came in on a donkey. Not exactly the most noble of ways to enter a city. And then he spent the next week talking to them. He didn't do all that much. He just spent more time talking about what was important, about what people should be doing, about what people shouldn't be doing or seeking or expecting. And so over the week, the crowds started to disperse a little. They weren't quite so sure this is what they were looking for after all. And on Good Friday, the expectations weren't met once again. Because rather than saving everyone, Jesus died. He was killed by those very powers that people wanted to be freed from, by the Roman rule. All those signs of injustice, lack of freedom, the crushing of hopes, they seemed to win. He didn't hide, he didn't fight, he died. So we get to this morning, Easter morning, and we wonder, given that this is the story, how is Jesus not going to meet our expectations once again? And there could be two different ways to look at this. So we could start with saying people didn't expect him to rise. Certainly in Luke's gospel, which we read, there was no expectation anything more would happen. The women went to the tomb expecting they would find his body and care for it the way they would care for any body. And that would be it. And then that expectation isn't met. They hear good news. They go to the disciples. They share what they've heard, what they've seen, or in this case, not seen, which is Jesus dead. And the disciples don't believe him. This is just a bunch of women talking some nonsense. You know, like all women, not worth listening to. They're expecting to hear that Jesus is dead. They're not expecting anything else, so they don't listen. So one way we don't get what's expected in this story is that Jesus isn't dead. But we could also say that at the time, the idea of resurrection itself wasn't as big a deal as it might seem today. In fact, all over the ancient world, gods were being killed and resurrected. It's kind of like a rite of passage for any small god that might be wandering around. Some kind of death, some kind of assertion of their power over death. Resurrection, why not? So the idea of resurrection isn't a surprising or a new thing in this context. In fact, you know, it might even be considered the expected thing. And the stories go that Jesus himself brought Lazarus back to life. And if he managed that, then surely he should manage it for himself. So you could say that resurrection itself wasn't something unexpected. And if that's the case, then what is it about this resurrection that isn't what we might expect. Well, when we listen to Luke's story, we don't see Jesus. At least not yet. We get to look forward to that later on. We don't see Jesus alive. We just see an empty tomb. In this story, we don't hear Jesus speak to the woman. He does speak later to the men. But in this story, we don't hear Jesus speak to the woman. We just hear the words of others sharing what has happened. Now, Matthew adds in a thunderstorm for dramatic effect, and angels appearing like lightning. And Matthew and John both have the woman, or at least one woman, Mary Magdalene, see Jesus and speak to him and hear his voice. We heard that in the junior choir anthem this morning. That personal experience, that direct encounter with Jesus. But for Luke, what we have is an absence. We have an empty tomb. We have a story that isn't believed. And that might feel a little bit more appropriate for many of us who aren't so sure about this resurrection idea anyway. It's a bigger leap for us now than it was 2 millennia ago to think that this is something possible. To think, in the first place, that we might say Christ is risen, and that we might actually mean it. David Lowe's writing about Luke's gospel suggests maybe one of the gifts is that it reminds us that faith is not the opposite of doubt. Faith is not the opposite of doubt. You don't have faith if you believe everything. You have no doubts. Instead, faith and doubt go together. Faith is about ongoing questions, ongoing seeking, not certainty. If we're certain of something, often people say, what room is there for faith? So faith is not understanding, not being sure of it, asking questions, and yet letting this story transform our lives anyway. Letting this story, this promise, this absence be something that we celebrate with flowers and trumpets and alleluias and extra anthems and extra people, so the singing sounds even more exciting than usual. Letting this story speak to our lives not for 1 hour on a Sunday morning when we hope it won't rain, but each morning and each day. Maybe being Easter people is about finding ways to celebrate absences. To celebrate those spaces where our expectations aren't met, and where something different is happening. Not out of certainty that we know what's going on, or how the world works, or how we relate to each other, but out of a faith that clings to some deeper meaning, to some bigger truth. So if we say Christ has risen, and if we say we are Easter people, and if we don't just dismiss the resurrection as an idle tale. But interpret it and try to understand it in our ways, in the ways that touch our lives, make sense to us. What does the resurrection mean? What would be possible if it were true? And you might remember that whenever I say true, I'm never talking about literal truth. That boring, it's exactly like this, but truth with a capital T. The something more, the metaphor, the story that shapes our lives and means more than any simple facts might mean. So what would we think? How would our lives be changed if the resurrection were true? What would be possible? I don't have one answer. That's your question. That's the question of each of us as Easter people. To think about how this story is not a one nice time a year, but something that touches our lives. How the spaces we're simply not seeing our fears, not seeing the worst, is a cause for celebration and deserves flowers and trumpets and extra choir anthems. And if the resurrection is true with a capital T, if it can transform our lives, then so much more is possible. Because it means that death does not have the final word. It means that love and life are stronger than fear and despair. It means that hope can win out over anger. It means that the hard times that we face are not ones that we face alone, but are shared with others, carried by God, and transformed into new learnings and new possibilities and new life. It means that however bleak the future looks, we can still meet it with joy and work towards it with faith, which is not born of certainty, but is about how we work and how we live and how we love in the world. If we believe the resurrection is true with a capital T, whatever that means for us, then it means we can keep going, keep loving, keep becoming more than we think is possible, and expect that the world can be more than we think is possible as well. So we're called to celebrate the absences, to hear the story. And even as it sounds like nothing more than nonsense, to listen anyway. To not dismiss it too quickly, but to ask, what does this nonsense say for us? Christ has risen. Christ has risen indeed. Thanks be to God. Hallelujah.